Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Blog and News on the Radio. My name is Simon Barrett, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes. This is another in our ongoing series, The Week in Reviews, a chance to sit down one-on-one with a mover and shaker in the entertainment world. Today, we're going to be talking to Christopher Brown from the, I would say, highly experimental band Random Touch. But before I introduce Christopher, let's listen to a track from their upcoming release, Turbulent Flesh. This is track 2, Finding the Sun.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Christopher, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Simon. Very pleased to be here.
As I understand it, you've been in the music industry since the early 70s.
That's valid. My first band was in 65, but I was in fifth grade, and we were doing Tijuana Brass covers, so, and we weren't making any money, so I don't think we can count that.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about Random Touch and the history behind it.
Sure. Random Touch is myself on drums ordinarily. Obviously, this record is an exception in that sense. James Day on keyboards and Scott Hamill on guitars. We also have a member of the band that doesn't play an instrument. He does video, and he shoots experimental videos to our music, and we've gone around to film festivals and stuff with that. But the history is that the three musicians went to high school together many decades ago, have maintained a friendship and a deep love of music. I think we all, in one way or another, came into recognition in the 70s that our experimental nature meant that we weren't going to be making a good living making music. And so we all made the decision to continue to make music, but not to try to make a living from it, which is what we've done for quite a few decades now. We have focused at different times on playing our conventional instruments, but we've also enjoyed playing with non-conventional instruments. You know, I want to say going back to probably the early 70s, we really started to enjoy and explore the possibilities of invented instruments and ready-made instruments, using things that weren't intended and using them in conjunction with the conventional instruments that we had all practiced and learned on and all that sort of thing. And we have just continued to love that experience. Actually, Simon, I think you might find this a little bit interesting. One thing that happened that really propelled us from a casual use of these ready-mades, as I'm calling some of the instruments you just heard there, which was recorded at Scott Hamill's barn, developed out of a situation where James Day and I wanted to continue to make music, but, you know, we had careers, we had families, we really had the best chance to play music at night after the kids went to bed. And I had a drum set in my basement, he had a acoustic piano in his living room, but we really couldn't make music on those occasions because it would wake up the kids.
Right.
And so really, necessity being the mother of invention, we took to the car. We would actually, initially I think we had some kind of cassette, some high-end cassette recording, and then we moved on to videotape, and then ultimately we got a nice 24-bit DAT machine. And we would actually go off to some remote place in the middle of nowhere, some farm road somewhere, pull over the side of the road, set up our mics in the corner, and we would have, who knows what we had. You know, sometimes I might have gone out and gone around to different manufacturing plants in the area, and I would pick up a bunch of scrap metal, you know, just squares of 7-inch by 10-inch various thicknesses. We might grab some things out of the kitchen. We might grab some children's toys. And we actually, for, I want to say, close to 20 years, did not play out and very seldom played our traditional instruments with each other. We actually played these ready-mades, for lack of a better word, and that was our very satisfying love of music being expressed for what was a couple of decades.
Turbulent Flesh is being released on vinyl. A very retro approach. Why did you decide to take that approach?
Well, I had gotten turned on to vinyl again by some younger friends. I guess they're probably in their late 30s now. And bought a turntable myself, and I still had a lot of my old records, and really rediscovered it after having set it aside when CDs came out. And immediately recognized, you know, something superior in the sense that I could listen for 3 hours to my turntable, but I could not listen to a CD at a high volume for that period of time. It's just a harsher medium. And it really, I think, is somewhat of a reaction against the MP3 compression. I really have a grave dislike of what music's become in the commercial sense of iTunes and all that. And I just recognized that, you know, here we had this 24-bit recording that was going to be dumbed down to 16-bit on a CD. And this piece more than any other, because this record more than any other, because there are so many nuances of sound with the three of us at times separated by, you know, 20 yards in the barn, making various sounds of scraping and pounding and wiggling and all the other sorts of things that we do with our ready-mades, that it was going to be a superior sonic experience to listen to this on vinyl. And so we jumped into it, and I'm very happy with the results. It definitely has more to offer the ears than the current CD would.
There are many people that make that pretty same argument. The vinyl has a richer, more realistic sound than CD. That's obviously your thought.
It feels like the difference between being touched by velvet gloves versus some really coarse or even metallic-y sort of thing. It just, you know, I listen to CDs a lot, and they're adequate, and if I don't listen for too long, I'm happy. But the vinyl really is something special. I mean, obviously, you have to take care of it, and if you play it too much, it's going to degrade, and all those other negatives. But we really did want to release at least one vinyl here, and this seemed the best one. This is the only release we've had, which is pure ready-mades with no conventional instruments on it whatsoever. We're ordinarily very experimental as conventional instrument players, but this, of course, is one whole step beyond that in terms of being extremely experimental.
Of course, the ultimate would be to offer the vinyl with an 8-track recorder.
It's true. We grew up on that. We had a number of wonderful 8-track recordings back in the early 70s.
Right. This is your 11th release, I believe. Are the other albums as experimental?
No, they are not, actually. Of the 10 previous releases, we did have 3 releases where we had a mixture where we would have some tracks that were conventional instruments and some tracks that were based on ready-mades. But all the other ones have been conventional, and they're certainly unusual in every case, but this is definitely one step further, the fact that the listener doesn't have any of the touchstones of the familiar sound of drum, guitar, and keyboard, which, of course, is something that everyone has had an experience of, whereas we're playing cow stanchions and 80-year-old watering troughs and all sorts of old and unusual things.
Why the resistance to using regular instruments?
No resistance at all, Simon. We absolutely love it. We typically get together a couple of times a week, and we love to play music, and what happens is come the warmer weather when the barn is hospitable, it's just a wonderful break. And for a time, we actually thought of it as R&D, if you can imagine a biotech company having R&D and then having their main product. But we really just love doing it, and it's just an eye-opener. Well, let me back up. What this does for us is that because we are pure improvisers, we don't talk about the key, the mood, the speed. We don't talk about anything before beginning to play, and that's true of our conventional instrument play and this other stuff. Because of that, in order for us to really catch a deep wave and be able to ride something that is bigger and beyond us, we need freshness. And our, just as Scott Hamill might rotate among a banjo and a electric guitar and a MIDI guitar and a bass guitar, and I might do the same with playing around with snares and different other sorts of things. We do that in order to get freshness, which is just very invitational to the magic of music that we want. And so taking this complete break from our instruments once a week, and instead of recording a second time that week with conventional instruments, recording with this and playing with this, it's just fun. And honest to God, we simply love doing it. And we're that much hungrier then when we get together 3 or 4 days later and go in the studio and jam with our conventional instruments. So we don't have resistance to them at all. We love them quite a bit, but this really does offer a variety and a freshness, and it's an eye-opener. It really does change the way we play. After you discover some new way of making a sound, to then take that method, technique, if you will, it doesn't seem like a technique because we don't hone it, but it is a technique, and then apply that to our instrument, particularly guitar or drums. Obviously, keyboards doesn't quite have that capability. Results in more unusual and more interesting and more fresh sound coming out of our conventional instrument play.
Okay. Now, clearly you play in the studio and you play in the barn. Do you also play live?
Yes, we do. We have not played live with the ReadyMades in a long while, but we are looking to get back to that in the city. There's a number of, in Chicago, a number of very interesting places devoted to experimental music that are too small to fit a drum set and an electric guitar and all that sort of stuff, which are just perfect for taking a trunk load of ReadyMades and performing. So we're looking at doing that. We've been, for the last several years, we had focused quite a bit on our experimental films. We've been going around to film festivals in Austin and New York and San Francisco, and we're back to playing out more, and we absolutely do. It's a different sort of thing. It's more like going to watch surfers in the sense that, you know, we can't just on the spot jump into something. We have to sort of wait. There might be, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of meandering around on our instruments, sort of waiting for the wave to come and carry us away. And that's very different. Our fans are accustomed to that in the sense that that sort of no-no noodling around on stage is something that has to happen for us, because sometimes we certainly do start right in and do a 7-minute song, but other times we'll spend a couple of minutes just sort of feeling around the edges until suddenly we see where the thread is, and then boom, we're off for a 3, 5, 7, 9 minute jam that somehow is bigger than any of us. It somehow has a structure of its own that none of us has devised or thought about.
This kind of music elicits very different responses from different people. You can't hum it in the shower, and I doubt you could successfully dance to it. Who are your average fans? Are they old? Are they young? Are they rich? Are they poor? Are they college grads, high school dropouts?
Goodness, let's see. I'm going to back away from the ready-made stuff such as this. We simply haven't played it out often enough or recently enough for me to measure that. But the fans, goodness, I want to say just all over the map, certainly a fair number of younger people, and therefore mostly poor people probably, but also people that are between my age and college age people, and people even my age. It's really it's hard to say. Certainly people that have been into progressive rock can find an entree to at least our conventional instrument play. People that have had exposure to classical music, particularly 20th century classical, have more of an entree into this more avant-garde stuff that you have on Turbulent Flesh. But also a lot of people that don't have any specific background in these older music forms, but are lovers of music. You know, people that really love music and like to sit down and listen and lose themselves to music are people that tend to be our fans.
I'm guessing, and it is a wild guess, and I'm reading between the lines here. I'll just bet you have some classical training.
That is true. I did at one point play in the Chicago Symphony, University of Chicago Symphony Orchestra. James Day has had pretty extensive composition training. We really simultaneously were discovering Jimi Hendrix and Traffic and King Crimson, Bitches Brew, Herbie Hancock's Mondishi Group, Barber, Bartok, Stravinsky. They all were just, it was just a delicious explosion of music that came to us in our adolescence. And without a doubt, one of the threads was the classical one. And James and I certainly had some training, but we both abandoned it. We both found it too confining and too exclusive of the opportunities that rock and jazz presented us. Scott Hamill, on the other hand, while certainly a fan of Charles Ives and a listener of that sort of stuff, wasn't trained. You know, part of, I think, the root of a lot of the success of Random Touch is the three of us are very, very different. But you're absolutely right. Myself and James Day have had training in the classical arena.
Okay, let's take a little break here. This is track 4, Sudden Intuition. Where does Random Touch call home?
We're in northern Illinois. We're about 50 miles northwest of Chicago.
Oh, okay. Experimental music is often, or rather always, shunned by the big labels. Ever tried playing with the big boys?
No. We're quite happy being on our own small label and doing our thing. It would not be a fruitful exercise to pursue the big labels at all, not for us.
I think you probably represent 99% of all musicians with that statement.
It's something. I think there's some great opportunities for a renaissance here. You know, it was an amazing thing back in the late 60s to just see the explosion, and it sort of caught all the commercial interest and corporate interest, by surprise. But, of course, they moved in quickly, and it all got tamped down by the late 70s. But I think once again here with the loss of sales, the CD turning into a promotional item and not really being a source of revenue has meant that we have a big opening here. And once again, I think there's a chance for a great spark of a revolution to happen again. We're very excited about the possibilities right now.
It's interesting. You're acting like my straight man in this interview. I was just about to ask, you know, the music world has changed a great deal in the past four decades, and we're both young enough to remember the 70s. I guess the huge change is the internet. Is the net a useful tool for you?
Well, yes, it is. But like a lot of things, I think it's one step forward, one step back. I'm very disappointed that while the great love of resolution has resulted in, you know, bigger and better television and Blu-ray DVDs and all that, at the same time, there's been no urge, it seems, for higher quality, whether it's the, you know, the quality of audio on a telephone or the quality of audio on a CD. It's been towards the miniaturization and the speed, and it's been very disappointing. And the internet is, you know, very much responsible for that. But on the other hand, you know, look at this. Here I'm having a conversation that people spread far and wide are hearing. You know, here I am having this CD, perhaps, and certainly, or this album, and certainly previous CDs, played in places like Argentina and Malaysia and Stockholm and Paris and London. You know, it's just amazing that this band that is quite localized here in Northern Illinois has fans and radio play and other forms of exposure worldwide. And absolutely have to recognize that it's the internet that's made that possible. But
where can people find you online?
Well, we do have an exposure at MySpace, which seems like the most popular thing for everybody under 40 to do. But we also have a website. It's randomtouch.com, and we have samples from all 11 of our CD releases there, including this final release.
Wow.
And that's a great help, and I'm glad to have that out there, and it really is a wonderful thing that people are able to access that information and, you know, get as much depth of understanding of Random Touch as they want, or as cursory a glance as they like, no matter where they are in the world. So I'm glad for the internet, but I do think that it's a mixed bag.
Where can people order the vinyl?
The vinyl can be ordered shortly. It's not available to everyone yet. It'll be available at CD Baby, and it will be available on our website.
All righty. So, folks, you got to keep checking on their website. Are any of the pieces recreatable, or are they all just one-offs?
I would say there's probably a couple of pieces that could be recreated. It's not something we think about, because even with conventional instruments, we never have an interest in recreating things. But in many cases, I think it would be too difficult to figure out what it was that was going on. You have three people, six hands, 6 feet. There is at least one video. One of these was documented by Matthew Eben. And so we do have one documentation that would conceivably allow the piece to be recreated. Interesting question, but as I said, our great joy is in losing ourselves to this improvisation and just letting it happen. So it certainly won't be us that recreates any of it.
Christopher, this has been wonderful, and alas, our 30 minutes has come to an end far too quickly. And unfortunately, my producer won't let me improvise.
Understood. Well, thank you very much for your time and your questions.
It has been delightful, and I do wish you and your band every success in the future, and do hope that we can talk again.
Excellent. Thank you, Simon.
Okay. Thank you. This is Simon Barrett saying goodbye.